Obviously, this parsha, the most prominent story that sticks out is the issue of Yaakov Avinu stealing the brachos that Yitzchak wanted to give to Esav. And there are a number of difficult questions. Question number one, on the most basic level, is why did Yitzchak want to give brachos to Esav? Didn't Yitzchak know that Yaakov was the more righteous child? And why did Yitzchak want to give brachos to Esav? What did Yitzchak think? And then, of course, we have the other issue, that if Yitzchak did want to give the brachos to Esav, then how does Yaakov get them by fraud? I mean, if Yitzchak blessed Yaakov thinking he was Esav, it's not like a magic trick, you're there. You know, if Yitzchak was mechaven to bless Esav, then the brachos would go to Esav, even if Yaakov is the one that's there. So going on the first question, what was Yitzchak's havamina? Why did Yitzchak think that Esav is Roy LeBracha? So there are a few different mahalchim that the Meforshim have. One mahalach is that of the Barbanel. The Barbanel simply says that Yitzchak was fooled to some degree, that Yitzchak was so holy. Yitzchak did not understand deception. He didn't understand hypocrisy. Esav in many ways came across as a righteous person. Esav used to ask Shilas, how do you take off maser from straw and salt and water, which, you know, you don't have to take off maser from. Esav also had some merits. Esav was very exceptional in the way that he honored his father. So in Mela, the Rabbanel simply says that Yitzchak literally thought Esav was a bigger tzaddik, or at least was a great tzaddik. Now the question is, though, it's very clear that there's some good, strong kashas in the Abarbanel. Because it's clear that Yitzchak did not think Esav was a true tzaddik. Because the proof is that when Yaakov comes dressed as Esav, because he's wearing the heavy, the hairy goatskins, so Yitzchak says the famous words, Hakol kol Yaakov. The voice is the voice of Yaakov. Hayadayim yidei Esav, the hands are the hands of Esav. Now Rashi explains, based on the Medrash, that it doesn't mean Yaakov's voice was different than Esav's voice. They had the same voice, actually. They were twins. But it means this got to be Yaakov because he's using the name of Hashem. And Esav never uses the name of Hashem, which means Yitzchak already knows Esav is not ragil to use Shem Hashem. Right? So why does he want to give him a bracha? A second raya that Yitzchak knew that Esav was not a tzaddik is because it says right before this whole maisa, it says that when Esav saw that Yitzchak didn't, that Yitzchak didn't want Yaakov to marry the Benos HaKanani, he went and he married the daughters of Yishmael. Right, Esav's wives were the wife was the daughter of Yishmael, and it says beferish, this was a moras ruach. This was something that was bitter to Yitzchak and Rivka. So these are two proofs that Yitzchak already knew that Esav was not so righteous. So we're back to square one. Why did he want to give Esav a bracha? So a related pshat is the following: that Yitzchak certainly knew very well that Yaakov was a greater tzaddik. And that's exactly why he didn't want to give him a bracha. What is a bracha? A bracha is like a crutch. A bracha is special divine assistance to help you in accomplishing your mission. So precisely because Esav was flawed, Yitzchak wanted him to have special siyata dishmaya to be able to do what he could do. But on contrast, he wanted Yaakov to work hard for his spiritual growth, because Yaakov was capable of it. And as Chazal say, lefun tzara agra, according to the hardship is the reward. So for Keret, he wanted to give Esav the crutch precisely because Esav was spiritually weaker. And so there are different mahalchim, what was Yitzchak's havamina. But I want to share with you a thought of the Malbim. That's a very important thought. The Malbim says the following. There are actually two different brachos that Yitzchak gives Yaakov. One bracha is when he thought he was Esav, and the other is the bracha when he knows he's Yaakov and he sends Yaakov away. And these are two different brachos. You will note, this is all the Malbim. The Malbim says that the bracha that he gave Yaakov when he thought he was Esav, in other words, the bracha that he was intending to give Esav, is all a bracha of Olam Hazeh. Hashem should give you due in prosperity, and nations should work for you. it does not mention spiritual growth. It does not mention becoming the nation of God. It does not mention perpetrating the covenant that Hashem made with Abraham. The first mention that Hashem should give you the koach to perpetuate the covenant that was made with Abraham is only later when Yitzchak knows he's talking to Yaakov and he sends him away. So here is what the Malbim said. It was always Yitzchak's intention to give the spiritual leadership to Yaakov. Yitzchak knew that Yaakov was more righteous. Yitzchak knew that it was only Yaakov that was capable of being the one who would bring godliness into the world, who would teach Torah, who would create a nation of Am Yisrael. Yitzchak knew that, and it was always his intention that the bracha of Birchas Avos, to continue the legacy of Abraham, that would be Yaakov's bracha. But Yitzchak wanted to do something for his son Esav. He loved Esav. Esav had kibud aviyim. And he knew that Esav is not going to be the person who sits and learns, and Esav is not going to be the kadosh and the tor. What do I do for my son Esav? So Yitzchak had a cheshbon that perhaps what could be done for Esav was something similar to the partnership that later existed between Yisachar and Zebulun. What was the partnership of Yisachar and Zebulun? In which Zebulun occupied himself in commerce, maritime commerce, and Zebulun used his resources to support Yisachar, who would learn Torah full time. And what do we say? That the Zebulun's of the world share the reward of the Yisachar's. By the way, it's a little digress for a moment. We have this concept of Yisachar-Zebulun partnerships, where I support you in your learning, and I get half of your reward. So it's interesting. It's not so pashut what that means. Let's make up numbers. This is just made up numbers, just to quantify. Let's say a person who learns all day, I'm going to make up a number, there's no particular realism here, gets 500 points in Shemayim. So, again, this is just for illustration. So you're telling me that if I'm the Zebulun that supports you, I get 250. I get half of your reward. So what does that mean? What do you get? In other words, what does it mean to say the reward is split? So there are actually three different views in the poskim. What is a Yisachar-Zebulun partnership? And I think this is a very important question, because this would determine whether you should enter a Yisachar-Zebulun partnership. View number one says, Hashem takes the 500 and splits it in two. So instead of you getting 500, you get 250, and the Zebulun gets 250. Well, so you might think, so why should I enter a Yisachar-Zebulun partnership? If I don't get the Zebulun, I get 500. By entering a Yisachar-Zebulun partnership, I only get 250. The answer is that if you wouldn't be able to learn without the partnership, you might have to give up the potential of 500, otherwise you'd get zero for the 250. So according to interpretation number one, the 500 that you would get for your learning is split in half. That's a little negative in a way. The Aruch Chaim says not that way. It means Hashem doubles the reward, meaning to say, you get 500, I support you, I also get 500. So we're half. But you didn't lose by it. You still get your 500. That, I like that one. I mean, that works out well. There's yet a third pshat that's very, very interesting. You get 500 and I get 250. Meaning you, in other words, the Zebulun, gets half of the reward of the Yisachar, but the Yisachar's reward is not diminished, but the Zebulun gets 50%. So you get your 500 and I get 250 out of the 500. Now, that does make a lot of sense too. The reason that makes a lot of sense is because it's really difficult to say why should the Zebulun get the same schar as the Yisachar. It's not so pashut. I mean, the Yisachar is like working and steiging a whole day. And let's say the Zebulun is a rich guy. So, you know, he works 5 hours a day. He makes, you know, $5 million in the stock market. He supports the Yisachar. And then he spends the rest of the day going to the movies or playing golf. Is it mistavra that he should get the same reward? So this parish takes it very, very literally. Hashem takes the whole reward of the Yisachar, divides it in half, and gives that to the Zebulun, and the Yisachar still keeps it. So there's three different shitas. But be it as it may, however we understand it, the concept that if I enable, if I support Torah, I get a great reward, That was Yitzchak Avinu's cheshbon. Yitzchak Avinu's cheshbon was, Yaakov will be the spiritual leader of the family. Yaakov will create Am Yisrael, but I will give Esav the blessings of Olam Hazeh. That actually means Eretz Yisrael will be given to Esav. Esav will be the government. Esav will build the cities, dig the ditches, create the market systems, the doctors, the lawyers, the hospitals. Also, that Yaakov Avinu will be able to learn and teach Torah. And that way, it's good for Esav and it's good for Yaakov. It's good for Esav, because Esav is a high-energy person. Esav cannot sit in the base medrash all day. Esav needs to run around. Esav needs to do business deals. So Esav will have avenues where he can do what he has to do, but it'll be for the benefit of Torah. And on the other side of the coin, Yaakov will be liberated, so says Yitzchak, from the demands of creating a society. Yaakov will not have to build the skyscrapers and dig for oil and plant the fields. This will be the energetic economic activity of Esav. And Yaakov will be free without distraction. This was Yitzchak's ideal plan. He saw a Yisachar Zevulun partnership where Esav gets the brachos of Olam Hazeh, which means particularly Eretz Yisrael, and Yaakov will be the Yisachar, the spiritual engine. Okay, that sounds great. What's wrong with that picture? Rivka understood that although in theory that could have worked, Esav was too far gone to use his resources for the benefit of Yaakov. And if Esav would be given the blessings of Eretz Yisrael, the ownership of Eretz Yisrael, he would not use it to free up Yaakov to be able to learn Torah. He would use it to oppress Yaakov, to destroy Yaakov, and the like. And therefore, she needed, as it were, to engage in behavior which would result in Yaakov getting those blessings as well. And we'll talk about that. We still have to answer the question, how do the ends justify the means, about the fraud and everything else. But at least we understand the machlokas between Yitzchak and Rivka regarding what could be given to Esav. The chiddush of the Malbim is that Yitzchak never intended to give the spiritual heritage over to Esav. He just wanted to give the Inyanim of Olam Hazeh over to Esav and create a Yisachar Zevulun partnership. Yitzchak also felt, and this is borrowing from Shimshon HaFal Hirsch a little bit, that Yaakov was not capable of being involved in the actual political and economic world because Yaakov did not understand deception and fraud. As Yitzchak saw Yaakov as someone like himself, and he saw Esav as better suited to be the tough businessman. So Rav Hirsch says an amazing thing. Rav Hirsch says that when Yaakov dresses up like Esav, he wasn't a very good liar in some ways because he continued to talk like Yaakov, right? Yishem Hashem. So what's the purpose? I mean, if you're trying to fool your father, why not go all the way? But first says that he wasn't trying to fool his father, actually. He wanted his father to know it was him, but to show his father, I too am capable of deception. And therefore, I can play that game. And since I'm capable of deception, I will not be victimized by deception because I understand things. In other words, this was a lie, the first wants to say, that in the middle, Yitzchak actually realized he's talking to Yaakov and gave him that blessing. It's not so mashma that way, because if that would be the case, why would Yitzchak be so surprised when Esav shows up? According to Rav Hirsch, he realized in the middle that he was talking to Yaakov. But be it as it may, this is the famous explanation of the Malbim regarding the Sochor and Zevulun partnership. Again, you have to know that, you know, a very similar type of thinking pervades certain segments of Neturei Karta. You know, the Neturei Karta are the extreme anti-Zionists. They don't believe in a state of Israel. They say, can't have a state of Israel until the coming of Mashiach. And they're not only against a secular state, they're against a religious state. In other words, even if the Chafetz Chaim would be the prime minister, they say it is absolutely usher. You cannot have a state until the Mashiach comes. So you could ask them, so what should we do? They say the state should be turned over to the Arabs. Make it a Palestinian state, or an Arab state, or a Jordanian state. Turn it over to the Arabs. Well, what would happen if we turned over Israel to the Arabs? So they will say, and I wonder what they would say this week, but they would say, they'll say the same thing this week too. They would say, if only the Arabs would rule over Eretz Israel, the Jews would have all of their shoals and all of their yeshivas, and we would learn, and the Arabs would support us, and the Arabs would take care of us, and there would be no animosity. We would get along wonderfully. This was Lahavdil, Lahavdil, Lahavdil. This was Yitzchak's thinking of, give Eretz Yisrael to Esav, and everything will work out well. Rivka, of course, understood that wasn't the case, and I think it's even more obvious that turning over Eretz Yisrael to the Arabs is not going to be a solution of anything. I mean, as it is now, our lives are in danger. We need Rachamei Hashem, and if we'd be the other, you know, if they would have sovereignty, it would be many, many times worse. Yeah.
How would that line of reasoning work with the promise of Abraham that he's going to give this land to his children if Yaakov was the heir to that promise?
Well, I think the understanding of Yitzchak would be that essentially we would look at Esav as a trustee, meaning he would manage the land, he would run the land, but it, since it would be for the spiritual benefit of Yaakov, so in a sense Yaakov is the true one that is benefiting from all of this. This is the notion of the Yisachar Zevulun partnership. But one, yeah.
So then if that had actually worked out, would yes. Western Christian Europe actually have sustained yeshivas and...
Well, that's a very interesting thing. How would that, in other words, how would that have played out in later history? In other words, not just in Eretz Yisrael, but, you know, Esav is, of course, the ancestor of Roman civilization, which in turn became Christian civilization, right? Yishmael is the forerunner of Islamic civilization, and Esav is Christian civilization. You know, who knows? It could very well have been that there would have been that collaboration. Maybe, but again, you know, you're dealing with hypothetical history. Maybe there wouldn't have been a Jesus under those circumstances. Meaning to say, all you would have had were the Umos Olam of Esav working to further the monotheism of the Jewish nation. So there wouldn't have been all of those breakaways, perhaps would not even have happened. So it's not a question of Christians supporting Jews. There wouldn't have been Christians. There would have been Noachites, B'nai Noach, and they would have been Mechazek Am Yisrael. Be an amazing thought of what theoretical history could have been. Now, it's interesting, I would just like to add a little prat. Rav Shimshon of Falhurst says something about Yaakov and Esav that sometimes people criticize. I mention it sometimes and people criticize me that I'm not allowed to say it. So I do want to preface my remarks that I am quoting Rav Hirsch. It's not my Kiddush. So if there's a problem, it's Rav Hirsch's problem. It's not my problem. And he says the following. He says that when Rivka gives birth to twins, Yaakov and Esav were twins, and the pasuk says, "Vayigdalu hana'arim," the youths were growing up, and Esav became a hunter, and Yaakov dwelt in the tents and studied Torah, whatever Torah meant then. So Rav Hirsch says, the key to understanding why Esav became a hunter, a wild person, and Yaakov was studious, why didn't they both develop the same way, is Vayigdalu hana'arim. What does that mean? You know that sometimes parents like to dress twins in the same way, because they're twins, even though these twins looked a little different. Of course, in the Haredi world, people dress all their kids the same way sometimes, so you can't tell. But even where kids wear distinct clothing, but twins, you often dress the same. So Rav Hirsch says, the problem with Yaakov and Esav is that Yitzchak and Rivka tried to raise them in an identical way. Put them both in the Beis Medrash, 12 hours a day, and make them learn. But the problem is, Yaakov and Esav had very different natures. Yaakov was studious, right? Yaakov was a masmid. Yaakov had zitzlish, meaning he could sit. Esav needed to play baseball, needed to play basketball. Esav needed to run around. Of course, Rav Hirsch doesn't use those particular examples. Rav Hirsch says, when you try to make an Esav into a Yaakov, not only will you not get a Yaakov, but you will take the goodness that Esav could have been, and you're going to make it evil. Shlomo HaMelech says in Mishlei, Chanoch Lenar Al Pi Darko. You must train a young person according to their personality. What does that mean? Every person has their own personality, their own midos, their own nature. And chinuch is not to change a person. It is not to take a round peg and stick it in a square hole, or vice versa. But it's to create an environment that according to the person's teva, they can grow. There are people who can sit and learn for many, many hours. There are people that might need breaks. Everyone has to learn Torah, that's for sure. There are people who are more energetic. They need to be involved in things. That is why we have Torah, Avodah, Gemilas, Chasadim. Some people emphasize Torah. Some people emphasize Avodah, Tefillah. Some people emphasize Gemilas, Chasadim. Some people get close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu by Musar. Some by Chasidus. Some by singing and dancing. Some by, again, doing Chesed for people in different ways. In Torah itself, some are the Gemara heads, you know, that's the most prized intelligence in the yeshiva world, probably, you know, analytic, rational, highly sophisticated reasoning. Others are more emotional. Some people will get their greatest sipuk from Chumash and Tanakh, others from practical halacha, others from hashgacha. So although it's true, we all have to try to do a little bit of everything, but each person's neshama is attuned to a different frequency of how it connects to Hashem. And Chanoch Lenar Al Pi Darko says that a chinuch in an ideal sense has to be geared to the individual. And therefore Yaakov and Esav were two different personalities. Esav, Rav Hirsch says, could have been a great tzaddik. Esav had energy, Esav had initiative, Esav had drive. He could have been initially the Zavon. But what happened was they were both raised to be Yaakovs. So in a sense, I'm just adding, Rav Hirsch's insight ties into the Malbim in the sense that it was too little too late. Meaning, what Yitzchak wants to do when Esav is 63 years old, you realize that that's how old Yaakov and Esav are, could have been successful when they were 8 years old. But when they were 8 years old, Yitzchak was not thinking about Yisachar Zevulun. He wanted to make them both Yisachars. And that ruined Esav. Now again, people say, who are we to make any judgment on the other? So, you know, I, it's not for me to make that judgment either. All I'm saying is that whether you accept Rav Hirsch's pshat in Yaakov and Esav, the insight in chinuch is a very, very important insight. That chanoch lenar al pi darka. How does that work in the yeshiva world? Okay, that's a little difficult. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky once said that sometimes the world of yeshivos is like the hotels in Sodom. What does it mean, the hotels in Sodom? Sodom also had hotels. They weren't too friendly, but Sodom had a hotel, and every room had a bed, and it was a one-size-fit-all. If your legs were longer than the bed, they were chopped off, and if your legs were shorter than the bed, they would be stretched to the breaking point till they reached the end of the bed. There's a Greek myth that way as well. This is called the Procrustean bed, that you have to fit no matter what. And often it is the case that you have to fit the system no matter what. If it snaps your legs, or if you have to amputate something, so be it. Now, Baruch Hashem, I have to say, you know, Or Sameach is actually a lot better than some other places that often, you know, the Rabbeim try to accommodate. We try to accommodate people's individual schedules. And the truth of the matter is, it's a difficult question for a yeshiva, because if you create a yeshiva where literally every single person is doing their own thing, it's hard to have a yeshiva. You're doing this, you're doing this, and you know whatever it is. So every institution has to create a certain amount of cohesiveness. But that is why, ideally, if you look in the Gemara, what was the ideal chinuch for children? V'shinantam levanecha. It was homeschooling. A parent originally taught their child. It was only when it was later discovered during the second bias, the second temple, that not all parents were capable of doing that, Yehoshua ben Gamla, who was a Kohen Gadol, was misakein schools. Now, people like to boast, and it's justifiably proud, that the Jewish people are the first nation in the world. They are the first nation in the world that had universal public education. Of course, the public education was religious education, but it was public education, meaning they created a school system, and you didn't pay tuition, by the way. It was a public school. It was supported by a tax on the whole community. But people are discussing, is that how yeshivas and day schools should be run today? Because if you go back to the original takana of Yehoshua ben Gamla, Maseches Bava Basra, that every community had to create chadorim and yeshivas for students, there was not a concept you pay tuition. You didn't pay tuition. Rather, these were supported by, I mean, that's how a public school works, right? How does a secular public school work? Everybody pays taxes. You can't argue, in fact, even a person who sends all his kids to yeshiva got to pay those taxes. You can't argue, I don't have a kid in public school, you got to pay. So, in the time of Chazal, that is how chadorim were constituted. You didn't pay tuition, everybody paid. Now, that actually means that the financial burden is much less because you're spreading it, whatever the cost of a school is, you're spreading it across a big population instead of the 100 kids, let's say, that are going to a school. But be it as it may, this is an amazing thing, that in the annals of the history of education, Am Yisrael is absolutely the first nation in the history of the world that created a mandatory, publicly supported system of education. We invented the public school. I don't mean public school in terms of secular school, obviously, but we invented the concept that a whole kehillah should support schools to give free education to individual kids. No question, this is not an apologetic. This is historical fact, and it's just absolutely true. But as proud as we are of that accomplishment, you actually see it from the Gemara, it was second best. It was not the best system of education. The best system of education is the parent teaches the child. And it's only when that didn't work because people either were not knowledgeable enough or people didn't have the time because they had to work, we went to the public education only when it became impossible to do Vishinantam Levanecha. And what is wrong with that? Why is parent-child better? Because parent-child is attuned to the individual. Once you have a school, it's very hard to be machanech every individual. We have to have a common denominator. Now, sometimes, I mean, you know this from your own shiurim. Well, the Baruch Hashem, our shiurim are relatively small. Sometimes a shiur might be pitched to the brightest, so people in the middle or below don't really follow. Sometimes a shiur is pitched to the ones who are least understanding, so then the other levels are bored, right? How do you get a shiur that gets everybody? Very, very difficult. So you create different classes, etc. But whatever it's going to be, unless you have a one-to-one, it's never going to be a situation where everybody's needs are being met at the same time. Right? This is the aside of Chanoch Lenar Alpi Darkai. There's a famous parable, I don't remember all the details, I should bring it in the special education community. It doesn't come from a Jewish source, but it applies. It would apply to yeshivas. About the animals got together, maybe came across it. They wanted to create a school to train animals. Now, each of the animals comes with their own talent. A squirrel is very excellent at climbing trees, but it doesn't swim. The eel can swim, but it can't climb a tree. So basically, the notion was that they decided everybody has to take all the courses. The eel has to take tree climbing courses, and the squirrel has to take swimming courses, etc. So at the end of the year, everybody passed with a straight C. Now, the significance of that is that by making everybody do everything, everybody becomes mediocre, but they lose out the excellence that they had within them. So instead of having an A swimmer, the eel now became a C swimmer and a C tree climber. And the question becomes, you know, isn't the chinuch of the Torah the opposite? That if a person has a certain gift from Hashem, that gift is supposed to be emphasized, and that gift is supposed to be the way you serve Hashem. That is the unique thing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you. I'm sorry, was that somebody had a hand up? Yeah.
Yeah, so then, besides for creating the public school system, do we also create the homeschool system?
That's correct. That actually is correct. Actually, the Torah created that by saying "Rishinan Sam Levonach." That's correct. In the ancient world, there wasn't too much education. Only if you were rich, you hired a tutor. Alexander the Great's father hired Aristotle. Amazing what money could get you. Aristotle was the most famous non-Jewish philosopher of antiquity, and he was the private teacher of the little Alexander the Great and the like. There's a nice story. You know, there's a Rosh Hashiva of in Gush Etzion, of Aaron Lichtenstein. Perhaps you heard of him. Not to you and me, Rosh Hashiva, but he's very, 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 very chashuva, Talmud Chacham. And he used to live in Katamon, and he would commute to Gush, right, whatever it is, 45 minutes away. And if you've been to Katamon, Katamon has a very well-known shtibl, meaning continuous minyanim type of thing, and people learn the Katamon shtibl. It's like, you know, Yerushalayim, Baruch Hashem, we have certain centers where you can almost get 24-hour davening. Zichron Moshe, I believe, in Geula, has minyanim continuously except between 3 and 4 a.m. Because for some reason, it's like after Maariv and before Shacharis, so you can't, that's the one time you can't get a minyan there. Then you have a famous shtibl in Beis Yisrael near the Mir. And then you have the Mei Asharim shtibls, and another, yet another shtibl is the Katamon shtibl. I have to know this because I'm often stuck. I have to say Kaddish, so I know where all the shtibels are in Yerushalayim and all times. So he was learning with his son in Katamon. He was a Rosh Hashiva. He is a Rosh Hashiva. He was learning with his son in Katamon. So somebody went over to him and said, you know, I'm very impressed that even though you're a Rosh Hashiva, you manage a yeshiva of 500 students, you still make time to learn with your son. That's very impressive. So he said, what do you mean, make time to learn with my son? The Torah commands me to learn with my son. I make time to also have a yeshiva. He says, my mitzvah d'oraisa is to learn with my child. Baruch Hashem, I'm able to make time for other activities as well. We sometimes forget this, and of course you guys aren't married yet, but remember this story when you get married. You know, sometimes we get involved in so many things. We do chesed, we do tzedakah, we're doing learning, we're doing all sorts of things. But somehow we think chesed is only what you do with people outside of your family. That's a very big mistake. Rabbi Saul Solanter used to say, "V'yahavta l'reyecha kamocha," love your neighbor, love your friend as you love yourself. Who is a closer neighbor to you than your wife? So remember that when you're loving everybody and caring about everybody, remember to care about the wife and children too. And again, as Avraham Lichtenstein points out, v'shinantam levanecha, to learn Torah with your child, that is a mitzvah d'oraisa. And that was the original and the optimal system of chinuch. And Yoshua ben Gamla created the public school system simply because not everybody was able to do that. In fact, I know in Baltimore, a few other cities as well, I think it started in Baltimore, there's a very interesting program, and Baruch Hashem, you guys are beyond it, so this is not for you, but I want to illustrate what it was. It's called Yisodei HaTorah. Now, what is Yisodei HaTorah? Yisodei HaTorah is a night learning program for parents, for fathers, who did not learn in yeshiva, to give them the tools to be able to learn with their children as their children are going through. Now, again, if you know Hebrew, your kid's in first grade, you can read with them. But the question is, a lot of these parents who did not have the good fortune to go to Or Sameach or the like, once their kid starts learning Mishnah and Gemarah, the parents don't have the skills to be able to learn with them. So this was a Jewish educational program. They do Gemarah, they do Chumash, they do Halacha, regular learning. But the goal of it is not only your own learning, the goal of it is to facilitate your ability to be a teacher of your children. Now you may say, well, why do I have to come up with that? Why don't I just say, we want you to learn? The answer is that to some degree, the Yetzer Hara sometimes, you know, if you just tell a person, hey, come 2 hours a night so you can learn Torah, the person might say no. But if you tell them, if you learn Torah 2 hours a night, in 6 months you'll be able to learn with your child, that already people are not responsive to. So in a way, it's a little bit of an advertising gimmick. But that was the goal. The goal was not only that parents should learn, which of course is the Iker goal, but that they should be able to teach their children and fulfill the mitzvah Vishinantam Lubanecha, right? And that's how they get a big group of people. A lot of parents might say, I don't want to put in the time to learn Gemara. But if you tell them, put in the time so you could learn with your child and teach it, that they would be willing to do. But Baruch Hashem, you're going to be positioned, Be'ezras Hashem, to be able to do this, and I hope you will certainly do it. It's a very, very important thing. Okay, we'll stop here. Have a good Shabbos.